in life for free. But you can give them to the birds and bees. I want the money. That's what I want.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. She's AV on the board. SP Futures down 22. Dow Jones down 26. And the Nasdaq's down 230. So we're up last night. So we made a turn here. Brendan, are you with us?
I am, Chief. How are you this morning?
All right, except we managed to catch every red light and all kinds of stuff coming in. It was, plus it's raining, it's crummy, it's kind of a miserable morning. So how are you?
Other than I'm doing okay. I'm back on this side of the lake for the morning, so things are going pretty well.
Maybe we'll see you in studio one of these days.
One of these days.
You know, one of these days. So what is everybody on, like the five-year program before anybody comes out or what?
I don't know if it's quite that long, but you know, we're making some progress towards things.
I mean, every month it's pushed out a month, pretty much, right?
Yeah. Yep.
That's not good. That's not.
Hey, you know, one of the things we have to give deference to today is the passing of Lou Brock. Did you see that over the weekend?
Not only that, I shipped you his lifetime stats and so forth. It's also Matt Weber's. It's also Matt Weber's birthday.
It is. Well, happy birthday to Maddie.
He's not here. He was thinking of calling in to talk about Lou Brock. So we'll see if he does or not. But there's a...
Well, let's see if he's listening right now. Maddie, if you're listening, first, happy birthday. And second, call in so we can talk about Lou Brock. And we also can't forget Ernie Broglio if we're going to talk about Lou Brock.
Very true. It's also an example, I think, of somebody... I mean, again, Maddie and I, we have this... ongoing battle, old guy versus young guy, Brendan, and I have a feeling, I don't know, well, actually, I don't know what side you're on this in this one, but I think basically...
Well, I'm on the young guy.
No doubt. There's no doubt. I think baseball is much more of a team game for just about everybody than everybody gives it credit for. And I say just about everybody. I think if you're an outstanding talent, you know, if you're in Ernie Banks, you can be MVP in a crummy team. You can have one of those kinds of years, Andre Dawson or somebody like that, that's just, you know, kind of a cut above. But for a lot of people, not that Lou Brock wasn't a cut above, it really matters who you're with. And I think that doesn't get anywhere near as much. The new stat era, people don't respect that as much. Because Lou Brock,
yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you that it is much more of a team game than people give it credit for. Because even if you're a tremendous hitter, even if you're a Ted Williams type hitter who's going to hit 400, unless you've got people around you who can hit and protect you, you're not going to get anything to hit. I mean, think about the year that Barry Bonds was hitting home runs out of the ballpark every single at bat. Just about how many times did he get walked because he didn't have that much protection around him? So you're right, and even if you're a good hitter, your team can't win games just by you alone because you need a pitcher.
Well, that's right, but I think when you know Lou Brock was very young when he was on the Cubs, and I honestly believe that one of the reasons why there's a lot of reasons. P.K. Wrigley didn't pump up with a lot of money or any of those kinds of things, but by and large, I think that the Cub management, because the wind blows out at Wrigley, you know, some of the time, they've always had the big thumpers on that team. And even in the 50s, you know, every one of their teams, they never had a year where they didn't hit 100 home runs, I don't believe. They always had guys that hit the ball. And I think that the total designation of the ballpark as a hitter's park is totally false.
Oh, yeah. If the wind is blowing in, it is the worst thing for hitters because that wind just stops balls. Kenny Holtzman's no-hitter.
Yeah.
Remember that? The ball was out over the wall for a home run, and the wind blew it back in.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that I'm going to say that, and I've read some stats on this, and I used to be a season ticket holder, the wind blows in really most of the time, except in August and September. You know, when you get those hot summer days, most of the time. And the Cubs have always had a slow team that could hit the ball. They were always station-to-station baseball, and it's exactly what you don't want in that park. I mean, it's exactly what you don't want in that park. It's a speed park, and they never recognize that. And every time they've had speed, they've won. They won with Darren Sandberg. They won with Jerome Walton Sandberg. When I say won, they didn't win the World Series, but they were pretty damn good. And then, of course, they won when they were pretty fast, and they won the World Series. But it's a speed park, and as soon as so Lou Brackham's up here. He's got nobody around him. They'd never had a speed team ever. He was only 21 or 22 when he came up.
Yeah, so he was very young.
He plays 3 years, and he had a little problem. And he wasn't the world's greatest defender. He had to learn, but neither was Billy Williams. But he learned how to play. And he said playing outfield, especially in Wrigley, is an acquired taste, shall we say? So he ends up.
Brock was a center fielder, so he had a little bit of issue than right field. I think right field in Wrigley is the toughest.
Well, but he never played center for St. Louis. That's another thing. Put him in left. Because then, of course, he goes to St. Louis. It's a surely speed team. It's a big park. He gets Curt Flood hitting behind him, right? Or was Curt? Which one let off? Brock or Flood? I think Brock let off.
Brock let off.
Then all of a sudden, you had Curt Flood, was another serious player behind you. And all of a sudden, the guy went from two something to God knows what is the first year, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because all of a sudden,
I think that first year, he hit over 300 against the Cardinals. Because they were traded mid-season, and the Cardinals went on to win the World Series that year in '64.
Yeah, I'm gonna dig up the stuff here, but so we have the market had gone from up last night. Actually, the Nasdaq was down a little bit last night, but then all of a sudden it's down pretty heavy this morning. You know, unbeknownst, and here's something that never quite reaches the tape. A couple of firms. Maybe I should go nameless on this, but I won't. One of them would be IB. A week clear through, but we didn't have any issues with it. And Schwab had an issue with the splits last week. Well, with Tesla and Apple. And I think they both, or one of them, raised the margin on Tesla, which is one of the reasons why Tesla. So people came in the next morning with some other Tesla being sold out from under them. And I think they both had a problem with, not positive about Schwab, but I think they both had a problem with they split the options and then split that and didn't split the stock till the next day, which is absolutely this is in this new world of everybody's. I'm gonna have to take a shot here. Everybody's working from home, Brandon, and everybody's everybody's got it all figured out. Everybody's got a system, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell me that the head of a firm of that size. Both of those sizes, that there's no Solomon sitting someplace that says, "Hey, why are all these margin calls going out?" There's no way on earth that a stock split should cause a margin call. Where is that guy in these places now, or that lady?
Good question.
I mean, question. for those who don't know what I'm talking about, when you talk about it goes hand in hand with me always. Essentially railing about our dollar and our Fed. When a stock split is technically known as 100% stock dividend, correct, Brendan?
Yes.
Because there can be 10% stock dividends, 50%, whatever you name it. But a stock split is 100% stock dividend, which essentially says if you own 100 shares of XYZ, you now own 200, okay? And if the stock is trading 80, the next day it will open, the opening price 40. Would be 40. It's free to open anywhere it wants, but unchanged is 40.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have one of the 80 call options or one of the 80 put options, you now have two of the 40 call options or two of the 40 put options. It's a very easy thing to do now. 50% stock split or a 25% is a real pain in the behind, because then you might have those options, might be 125 shares, but let's not stack it into that. This was a 4-1, I think, on one hand. One instance, it was 5-1 on the other. I think, but that's an easy one. So it actually was a 400% stock dividend. So if you owned one share of stock, you now own 400, correct?
Yes.
In one case, and it was 5 in the other. So you essentially, now the only problem is they've got these options now that aren't whole numbers. Well, they are whole numbers. But if you divide them by 4, they may not be. So obviously the 80s would be the 20s. But the 79s would be the, 19 and a quarters, right? If I do my math right. Well, whatever. So it's a little more complicated, but still, there should be no margin issue. Except that I think they raised the margins as part of this thing, and I don't think anybody know. Anyway, Lou Brock came out in 1961. When did, I'm going to say Billy Williams won the, they had two in a row. Was it Kenny Hubbs in 62 and Williams in 63?
I thought Williams came first.
Okay,
I thought Billy Williams came up before Kenny Hubbs.
Well, it would be 62 and 63 then.
I think Billy Williams was 61 and Kenny Hubbs was 62.
That could be.
I'm pretty sure that's the way. I'm pretty sure Billy Williams was 61.
Right, so Lou Brock played four games in 61, so he came up, what, last week in September or something. And he played 123 games in 62, 148 in 63. They have the team here in 1964, they have TOT. What the hell is that?
TOT.
He didn't get traded.
I don't know.
Then he was on the Cubs in 64. Well, he traded, unless he was in the minors for part of 64, was he?
I don't know. I don't know, but I know he came up in 64. He was playing for the Cubs, and then it was in July that he got traded for Brolio.
Well, they got him playing 155 games for TOT, and 52 for the Cubs, so they must have sent him down, I'm thinking. Because he only hit 258 or something, then he hit 251. So they trade him to St. Louis. The next year he hits 348. That's a jump.
That's a bit of a jump, yes.
Like 100 points?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that'll work. TOT must
be... Well, that's kind of like what happened with Tim Anderson a couple of years ago. He went from pretty bad to leading the American League.
But he also was amazingly powerful. He was one of the... I'm going to say, you'd know this better than me. There was only four or five guys that hit a ball out of Old Comiskey, and he was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Little known, because what, Dave Nicholson was one, and three other big bombers. Because hit one up on the roof, because the upper deck was so high. To get one up on that roof was a long way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, plus if he really whacked any kind of, I saw, was it Boog Powell hit one there, and he just hit a razor, and the thing, I think it was still going up when it hit like the third or fourth row in the upper deck. But because, I mean, you wouldn't hit a ball that high and that far was real tough. And even if you really launched one, it wouldn't be that. Anyway, but Lou Brock, you know, and he changed the game, but with the stealing and, you know, it was well, there was Maury Wills, and it was him, and it was Ricky Henderson. Now you don't see too many people stealing, but then he, what year did Curt Flood quit? Because, and here's his batting averages here. Actually, that year, 64, was his highest batting average ever.
Yeah, I think Curt Flood left baseball around 69 or 70, because that's when he filed suit to end free agency.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure, well, the Cardinals were in the World Series in 64, 67, and 68. And I think that his contract, that Flood's contract, ended after that 68 World Series, so it might have been like 69 or 70. When he filed suit to end free agency, and he never played again after that.
Yeah, I mean, did they ban him, or did he just not play?
They banned him. He was before it became a popular term, he was Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah. Well, and it, well, I mean, I don't know. You probably know this, but where's Lou when we need him? There was the Curt Flood case, and then. Which came first, the Flood case? I think the Flood case was before the Andy Messerschmidt case, correct?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Curt Flood was the first one to challenge free agency, and that was before Messerschmidt.
Now, did he lose, or did he just run out of time?
He actually won. Curt Flood won, but he was getting older, and nobody signed him as a player.
So, but Messerschmidt...
It was a Pyrrhic victory, to say the least.
But what did Messerschmidt win differently or more?
I think that I have to go back in my memory banks here. I don't remember the exact terms of what he sued for.
Because I know that whatever Messerschmidt won, essentially Curt Flood had won before. I thought.
Yeah.
But it was.
Yeah, I think Messerschmidt was the guy who was able to sign another contract, who physically signed a contract with another team, as the ramifications of what happened with Curt Flood. But Curt Flood won the right theoretically won the right to be a free agent and not have to be treated as chattel of the owners.
Well, why do you?
Up until that time, the owners had sway over everybody. If they wanted to get rid of you, they could just sell you to another team or trade you.
Well, have you ever? I'm sure you have. Have you ever read Pride of the Yankees with Lou Gehrig with?
Yep.
Who is it? Who's the actor? Staring right in the face.
Gary Cooper.
When he signed with the Yankees, and Walter Brennan came in, he says, "You are now the property of the New York Yankees." He wasn't kidding.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You literally were, like, forever. My friend from Notre Dame, Jim Doherty, real Brent. What do you call it when you do your law school if you do a, you actually write a paper. Most guys don't, right? You do like a thesis of some kind. It's not a thesis, but you get a law degree with honors or something if you write something.
Oh, law review?
Well, no, you actually, when you leave, you could have done that at the University of Chicago, too. You could have written something as a MBA guy, which, of course, nobody did. Well, somebody might have, but I don't know anybody who did. You could have written whatever the equivalent of is a PhD thesis, but they're not as long, and then you get a master's degree with honors. You know what I'm talking about?
A dissertation?
Yeah, but a dissertion is for a PhD. There's something you can write
what's the question?
Well, but anyway, he wrote it on the reserve clause. Mm-hmm. And while he was writing it, he kept calling me going, "You wouldn't believe this crap. These guys, they pretty much owe these guys. Because this is unbelievable. Because this is totally un-American." And I go, "Well, that's what they took. They took their antitrust exemption and ran with it. Is that a fair statement?"
Yeah.
But I mean,
it really is an amazing study when you look at what. But especially Major League Baseball, because they had an antitrust exemption, what they were able to do to keep guys in line. Remember, at that time, even guys, well, remember the line about Babe Ruth when he got a contract for $100,000. And how can you make more than the president? His response was, "Well, I had a better year." But imagine a guy like Babe Ruth today, both as a pitcher and as a hitter, getting $100,000.
$100,000 is a lot of money in 1920 something.
Well, it was, but it's not comparable to what even a middle infielder, 25th guy in the team, gets now.
No, but they didn't have TV. They didn't. And there was the revenue in the game was nowhere near the same.
But even at the time of Curt Flood, most of those guys needed to have a second job in the off season to make ends meet.
Yeah, oh yeah. Did you read? It was Ball Four. When Bouton would say, "Well, he won like whatever beginning games the year before," and he'd walk into the guy and he'd say, "Well, I want more money next year because I won more games," and they'd raise him from, "Well, okay, you're making 20, we'll give you like 22 or something." I was like, "Okay," yeah. And then he'd hold out for a little while, and then they'd say, "Well, now it's like 21," so he'd end up having it was literally, but you know, here's the weird part of it is, Brent, is again, I keep. One of the themes of the show, and it probably shouldn't be, is pointing out like the big lies, because they're all over the place. I mean, if you were to walk down the street or into a bar, in your case, a coffee shop, high end coffee shop, guy like you, 1%er coffee shop, you know, if you walk into one of those places and you say, "Is there free agency in baseball?" What percentage of people are going to say yes?
Almost everybody.
Now, is there really? There's free agency. After you make the major leagues, after 5 years, now is that free agency? If you or I get drafted by the Cubs and we're a shortstop, and there's 15 shortstops ahead of us, yet the Braves have like nobody because they just traded them away, we can't say, "Okay, after a year we're gonna go play for the Braves." We gotta wait till
that's true. We gotta wait till the end of that first contract. That was part of the negotiations. Yes.
So they essentially gave out of how many.
It's limited free agency, limited right to move.
So every Major League Baseball team, of which there's, what, 30? And there's 30, yeah. There's 30-some rounds in a draft, right?
Well, actually, they cut it down dramatically. I think this year there's only going to be like 5 or 6 rounds.
No, that's football.
Oh, okay.
Baseball's got to be either, I think there's 20-some. Anyway, they draft almost 1,000 guys a year, right? So how many people... at any given time are under contract. You know, 5,000. How many people have free agency? 10?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not exactly what you call free agency. Anyway, Brendan, we got to dash your SP futures now down 24. NASDAQ futures down 279. We're leaking pretty bad out of this boat. We'll talk more about that in a minute. Brendan, thank you, bud. Hopefully, we might have time to have you on later in the week because we didn't get a full Brendan fixed.
Okay.
Take care, bud. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. She's AV on the board. SP Futures down 30 now. NASDAQ Futures down 290. So we're leaking here pretty good. Dow Futures down only 50 because we got these things up in the Dow. We've got Johnson & Johnson up $1.30. We've got Coke up 39 cents. So not everything is down in the Dow. We do have Boeing down 370. They got some issues with the 787s now. This used to be quite the company. Not so much anymore. Anyway, over in Europe, we've got DAX down 140. These guys were all up last night. DAX down 144, 1.1%. FTSE down 20.3%. CAC down 76. That's 1.5%. In Asia, these guys are up. Just whatever his turn was, we'll get Joel will tell us why we're turned here. Nikkei up 184.8%. Shanghai up 23.7%. Hang Seng up 34. That's 0.1%. It's almost flat. Just on Friday, so people remember, Dow was down 159. The S&P was down 28. NASDAQ was down 144. So we were supposed to be doing the bounce here, not so much. A 10-year yield 0.68. Bund minus 0.49. Boy, the Japan almost up to 0.05, 0.046. Oil, whack, whack, whack. 37.59, it's down $2, 2.18, it's over 5%. Brent down 143, 40.58. Natural gas down 6 cents, 2.52. RBOB, 112. Cheap price at the pump, on the way. Gold down $12, 19.22, that's not good for me. Silver up 7 cents, 26.78. Copper, 3.04, down a penny. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. A lot of bad traffic, a lot of bad weather. What the hell?
Good morning, friends. Hope the weather doesn't affect your mood or day, because looks like widespread showers and storms will continue the whole day today and into Wednesday. 62 degrees currently right now in Chicago, and thunderstorms will slowly diminish during the afternoon, but expect steady rain overnight. The highest of the day will be 66 and the lowest 61. Finally, relief for Phoenix. The excessive heat warning is canceled, but still sunny and hot. The highest is 101 with light winds, and 70 is the lowest at night. Expect clear skies. A big jam continues on the outbound Eisenhower Expressway from Mannheim to the Tri-State due to a crash, closing two left lanes. Be safe driving. And sports reports, we have Cubs that won Cardinals 5-1, and Diamondbacks lost to Giants 2-4. Chief, back to you.
By any other stretch, that's Mannheim.
Mannheim, okay.
Yes, it's also LaGrange Road. There's two names. You always say LaGrange Road.
I hope people won't get lost by my directions.
With your directions, how could they possibly get lost? You just tell them where not to go. It's all right. Do we have Joel?
Good morning, Chief. You're cutting in and out a little bit. I'm not sure if it's on my end or your end.
I blame either you or AV, not me.
All right. How you doing, Chief?
I'm doing fine. Your horse, the horse was never supposed to lose, lost.
You know, there I go. My whole life I bet long shots, right? And then I switch. I go to the favorite. I go to the chalk. And they lose. Interesting thing about both of the losses. The filly lost on Friday, Gamine. She raced in a Traverse Stakes a month ago. She Dares the Devil raced 2 months ago. Same thing with Tis the Law. Tis the Law raced in the Traverse Stakes, cost himself a triple crown. Authentic did not race for 2 months. These horses, I cannot stress to you how fickle, how one race can just zap a thoroughbred. So, back to the long shots for me, Chief. No more favorites. Back to what got me here.
Well, when I was I did bet the ultimate favorite at Arlington Park when I was a ute. When Secretary ran against a pack of, he ran against the pack. What do you call it? He ran against the field. I wasn't about to not bet Secretary. He won by like 30 lengths, so.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it was, you know, times have changed. You know, it's the way they ran that Triple Crown races this year. The Traverse usually comes at the end of the summer after the Triple Crown. They got a little bit too cute. They should have, you know, they tried to have the Super Horse. They should have sat out the, Traverse.
Well, 4 months in the life of a 3 year old is a real long time.
Yeah, especially, I mean, these horses, there's some, I don't want to say inbreeding, but it's just, they're fickle animals. That's why they need the juice. I mean, you know, the stuff that happened before the race was very unusual with that horse flipping over. It was just, you know, unusual set of circumstances. I'll tell you right now, and this is just a general sports comment, I just didn't enjoy it. You know, sitting with those stands empty, you know,
yeah.
I don't know. Is the thrill of sports gone, Chief? That's my question to you.
I I think it is. I don't understand any of this, Joel. I mean, even at the Cub games, they show the place without a soul in there, and they pan the rooftops, and they're, you know, whatever, 30% full or 25, whatever the number is. People having a good time. Why can't there be 2,000 people in a park? I absolutely don't get it.
I don't know, Chief. I mean, you can ask why about a lot of stuff, and, you know, you're not going to come up with an answer. So, you know what? There's no coordinated effort on a national basis. You have 50 states all doing their own thing, and I don't know. I don't want to get pessimistic about the markets, though it's easy to today. I don't want to get pessimistic about the world, but can you say long-term capital management for me 5 times?
Long-term capital management. I'm pretty good at that. I probably could.
Well, you know, that's a lot what's driving the markets lower this morning. SoftBank, unwinding positions. They bet a little bit too much on Tesla and Apple after the split. A lot of the selling that you saw last week was them unwinding those trades. Also, you know, people are talking about the Gamma trade, and I know you know all about that, Chief, being an options aficionado. But, you know, Gamma trade's unwinding here into a down market on a rollover. Doesn't sound good.
Why are everybody, including my buddy Dr. J, jumping all over this SoftBank thing when everybody seems to be forgetting or don't know the part about a couple of firms raised the margin on Tesla the night it split?
I mean, whatever. And you had everybody, you had those ridiculous runs in Tesla post-split, or pre-split. I mean, there's a lot of different factors that you could put into why the market's going down. But, you know, when you have a whale in the market like that, and the whale unwinds, it's going to have a ripple effect.
Well, it does, but there are people that came in the next morning and had their stock sold out for them and were getting margin calls.
Stock was straight up the day after it split.
But the margin calls, if you had any kind of option trades and stuff, the margin calls,
right.
They raised the margin 80%.
Well, good for them.
Yeah. So we'll talk to you next week. You got a dash right here.
Yeah. I got a lot going, busy with the markets.
And, all right.
Just got a lot going on. But we'll talk next week, Chief. Thank you. Go Blue.
All right. Take care, bud. Do we have Kenny?
Chief, we do.
Yeah. Boy, that's a great handoff from AV. She did a nice job there. Hey, so what happened between last night when I dozed off and we were up till now and we got a carnage?
I don't know. It was very interesting because I did the same thing. I went to bed last night. I looked. Everything actually looked higher. The Dow was higher. It kind of looked like it was going to be okay. And then this morning, you know, I woke up and boom, here we are down another 300 on the NASDAQ, which isn't really surprising, quite honestly. Let's talk about it because, you know, we've been talking about it for a while. Valuations have gotten stretched. Whether or not you want to say it was part of this, SoftBank complex derivative strategy and everyone else that jumps on board and all that stuff, valuations have clearly gotten stretched. So whatever signaled it, whether it was, you know, at some point other algos recognized the fact that these prices were so out of line, it was time to, you know, take some profits and come back to the mean. But one way or the other, it shouldn't be surprising to anybody. And quite honestly, I actually appreciate the fact that it's getting, you know, they're shaking the branches a little bit and seeing who hangs on and who jumps ship.
I agree with you. I wonder how much the change in the margin right at the wrong time. A couple firms totally screwed up the split.
Yep.
How do you screw up a split after all these years, Kenny?
Well, I'm not sure how you screw up a split. Maybe, you know, because it's been so long since we've had a significant split that the people in charge now, you know, had never done such a thing before. There could be that whole change in generational leadership, right? But between Tesla and Apple both splitting on the same day, you know, it probably sucks. Not that it was difficult. You know, they were 4-for-1 and 5-for-1 stock splits. I mean, it should be relatively easy, but, you know, that whole story, I'm not sure that I completely understand how it could have gotten so screwed up as well, but one way or the other, you know, you could point to a bunch of different things, whether it's that, like I said, whether it's the complex derivatives trade, whether it's the realization that Masayoshi-san, you know, invested $50 billion in options trades, giving a massive exposure to the tech sector in the U.S., or all the Robin Hood traders that jumped on board because, you know, Dave Portnoy from Barstool Sports all of a sudden became this overnight sensation, you know, trading, you know, committing $500,000 at a clip to any one stock as if that's what all the retail investors are doing, causing all this excitement. You know, it all, to me, it just feels very much, it feels very bubbly, like it typically does in a bubble, right? Where the action gets so hot and everyone thinks that stocks can never go down. David Portnoy is a perfect example. All you do is throw a dart at four letters and buy the stock and it goes up. I mean, that's the epitome of the top of the market.
Well, when you start getting almost 2,000, like, and I did a, you know, kind of a half-assed calculation on Zoom, I had those guys at 11 times sales, Kenny. That's getting a little rich.
I mean, look, what happened last week in Zoom, right? The stock was already up 400% year-to-date.
Yeah.
January through last Tuesday. And then they come out with their guidance and their numbers, and they take the stock up another 46% in one day? I mean, come on. Is it me? Am I missing something in all of a sudden the way stocks trade? It seems euphoric, and it seems ridiculous, quite honestly. And
well,
look what happened. They took it up 46%, and by Friday last week, they took it back down. It was sitting right on, last Friday, it was sitting right on where it was on the Tuesday before they took it up.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that interesting to me, is that I think that's where Cisco made it in 2000, was 11 times sales before it cracked.
Right.
So once you start talking about stuff in terms of sales instead of earnings, you know you got a problem. At least, you always see,
right.
I mean, 11 times earnings, that's fine. 11 times sales, maybe not so much. You know?
Right. Right. And listen, nothing says that Zoom hasn't participated, and certainly during this pandemic, they've helped to change the world. They have. But the stock was already up 400%. Right?
Well, yeah, and where do you go when you get to, I mean, when you ask, you know, people, I don't want to sound like the, you know, the Eastern European.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Where do you go?
Well, you talk about
the
Eastern European guy who owns the apartment building. I mean, when Zoom gets to 475 and you say, okay, when is that place going to make, you know, $40 a year and send me a check for 20? And
right.
People look at you like you got four heads. Well, at 475, you should be at least thinking about something like that, like within the near future, maybe not tomorrow, but they're looking at you, well, never. They're never going to make $40 a share. What are you out of your mind? Well, then why are you paying $475 for the thing?
Right, exactly.
Because someplace, exactly. The idea is to make some dough, right?
Yeah, but I think a lot of it is the euphoria just around technology and what technology has done during this pandemic. I also think, you know, that discussion about the work from home stocks and the work from home ETF and all these new stocks that were going to change the world now that school started. These kids aren't going back to school. Everyone's Zooming. Everyone's doing, you know, Google meeting rooms or whatever they're called. You know, creates all this excitement. But I think once again, and you and I have talked about it, just sit back for a minute, look at these valuations and think logically for a minute. It's fine. They're great investments, but at some point, it's out of control, whether it's driven by sheer speculation in the options market or these complex derivative trades or the combination of ETFs and complex trades and, you know, just the overall excitement about people, you know, wanting to be in the market because it does nothing but go straight up, according to Dave Portnoy.
Well,
so,
Kenny, I think you and I mean, one of these days we got to talk for like a lot longer because I think you and I have a sense. Maybe more, you know, a lot of my other guests are from various places. Not all of them are in the market. We've got attorneys, we've got professors,
yeah.
And they're all very interesting and bring a side to the show. But I think you and I probably are more in the market really than just about anybody. And all this stuff, it all attaches together. And when you have, Brendan, who was just on talking about, because he's a municipal bond guy. And he says, you know, the Fed or whoever has driven these prices to the point. It's not like they just added liquidity to market. They actually drove the price to where none of the normal customers, meaning
right.
the insurance companies and people, will participate at all at this level. Who the hell wants a municipal bond at 2%? I mean, you can't lock up a 2% thing if you're Allstate when you're promising people a 3.5% return. So,
correct.
So instead of having this spread of investments for all the different people that are involved in the market, and you know, I know there's literally millions of people involved in the market. Some people looking for return. Some people are 80. Just give me my 6% for the next 20 years, and however long I last. I mean, there's right. all kinds of people looking for different things. And when you take the thing and screw it up, like the Fed does, or I'll use the term screwed up, even though I already did, I'll say you shake that tree, the normalcy tree. I've got people, Kenny, that will call me, not only just from my place, but for places I do subcontract work. They're 85 yep. years old, and they're like, I got to get 8% this year. And I'm going, well, okay, but where the hell are you going to get 8% at age 85 that doesn't involve like a real lot of risk? Well, I don't care what right. risk. Well, and then I'll say, well, you may not care, but I do. As your right. advisor, I mean, you're not the guy to pile into Facebook because it went up last week, and everybody wants right. to trade last month's market. But most people, if you say, I wish we could trade last year's market too, but we can't. You know,
right.
And it just, you don't, if something's moving, nobody cares. This momentum thing gets there a few times in my investment lifetime and yours too. Kenny, you can't argue against it. It's just there.
No, right. You can't argue against it, but what you can argue is like history repeats itself
right.
because we all know what happened when it gets bubbly like that, right? When it gets frothy and everyone thinks, you know, you're going to get into the market because it'll never go down. And then what happens? It crashes. And then everyone starts screaming and yelling. They say it's rigged. Here's the part I don't really understand. If you're somebody that, you know, I'm assuming your demographic, your listener, is somebody that's in the market, that has been in the market, not somebody that just got in last week and paid $479 for Zoom, but somebody that's been in the market, so therefore they've been participating as the market's gone up. These people shouldn't be people that are panicking at the moment, because they're already in, right? They've established a base. They've got a cost basis. They're watching the market. They've got advisors like you and me that are looking out for their behalf, making adjustments as they see fit, tweaking it, right, based on the broader issues, not the daily activity, because long-term investors really have to learn to shut that noise out, right? If you're a day trader, fine, then that's what you want is the noise every day. But the long-term investor has to have a much better plan in place, be it diversified, be it broad, be it whatever. But they shouldn't be reacting to the daily noise. They just shouldn't be.
Well, Kenny, what have you ever seen? I've seen times, but I guess I don't remember 2000 as well as I should, but a long time ago. I don't recall. I know the bomb, the dot bomb stuff went flying up ahead of everybody. But what I don't recall back then, and maybe you can, I don't recall. I've got people that I put, you know, a lot of this subcontracting work I got like 2 years ago. So there's a lot of people that I put in there, and we discussed with every single client, you know, what do we want to put them in? Well, some guys thought the Russell, I basically did a blend for everybody, but some people thought that oil was down and oil was going to come back. So we, you know, we're into this XLE, you know, at like 60. But thank God for puts and calls. So instead of being down, you know, 26 bucks, we're down 5 or something or 8. You know,
right.
You know, it's good work on our part, but it's still down. You know, it's still a pretty fair sharp stick in the eye. The Russell's down. Right?
Right.
I mean, and some people say, well, we're not coming back in the market in the economy until the Russell comes down. I don't know. I'm going to ask you one question today. I definitely want to get to.
Yeah, but you see, I think that's the wrong answer because if you like energy and you think energy is coming back, and I do because, listen, I'm in energy as well. I'm in the XLE. I'm actually, though, I took advantage of whether you're using puts and calls and options or whether you're just averaging down and being strategic about when you put more money to work. You can also help to build that broader portfolio and bring your average cost down and continue then to perform well, right? So, but those are long-term plays. We've talked about that for a while. A lot of people think energy is dead money. I actually think it's a great value play for the long term. I don't think demand is going anywhere. I don't think demand is falling off the edge. Like today, you know, they're talking about, you know, the surge in viruses around the world once again causing the conversation about demand destruction and blah, blah, blah. I think it's baloney.
Well, I think I'm not so sure that the people that are in at 65 are going to see that 65 anytime soon.
No, they may not, but the guys that are in at 65 should be buying it now at 30, bringing their average
right.
cost down if they still like the sector. If it hasn't fundamentally changed from when they first bought it, then they should average down, in my opinion.
I don't disagree, but what do you make? We don't usually talk about individual stocks, but I've gone along this thing a few times down here because you're like you. I feel it's so low, it's starting to look like up. How's that for a phrase? But I look at the Schlumberger. I mean, was this thing ever going to go past 20? I mean, this thing is a dead dog. I mean, yet they're all over that industry. You can't drill a well without doing something with some Schlumberger, can you?
Yeah.
And yet the stock's from 70 to 19.
I don't understand why it can't get out of its own way, but you know, you have again within the sector. Yeah, you can't just be so broad about it, right? Yeah, I think this is where you have to be strategic in the energy sector versus just buying a broad ETF. Now, listen, I will say I own the ETF, but I do own individual names as well. So within the sector, but and I tweak it as I see fit. I'm not day trading it. I'm not panicking every time there's a headline. I will say though, if you look at oil, I was surprised because I thought as the short term and the long term trend lines were converging, I actually thought oil was gonna break out versus breaking down. And what's happened last week? I was on vacation, so you know, I was. By the way, I apologize for not being on last week. I thought that was I thought I told you guys I was away. But one way or the other, it broke down. The dollar gets stronger, which doesn't help commodities, right? A stronger dollar puts pressure on commodities. Gold and oil are under a little bit of pressure because of the stronger dollar, as well as now they're talking about, you know, the demand destruction for oil. So it's putting some pressure on oil, but it's sitting right on its intermediate term trend line, which I think it's going to hold, and then start to turn higher again once you come up with this vaccine, which I think is coming sooner rather than later, which is a whole nother conversation about the efficacy of it, and are people really going to take it, and is this just a Trump thing, you know, to try to get him reelected? I think that's a whole ridiculous argument because it's not like Trump's sitting down in the basement of the White House mixing this vaccine. He's not. There are pharmaceutical companies and biotechs out there and scientists that spend their life developing and creating these vaccines. So I'm just waiting for it to come out. Would I get it? Yeah, I'd get it, depending on what I hear, but sure, I'd get it. I'm also 60 years old, so I'm not in my, you know, childbearing years. I'm not worried about, you know, is it going to have an effect on my ability to have children again? I'm out of that. I would understand, though, younger people may be a little bit more cautious, and they should. But you certainly got to sit around and listen to what the scientists have to say about it before you make
Kenny, I know I know several dudes that had kids that are like 70-something. You may not be dead yet.
No, I'm not dead yet, but trust me, I am not having any more
kids. Sometimes things shock you.
I'm happy to play, but I'm not having kids.
So I got to ask you a very personal question. How does a guy who lives in Florida and Cape Cod, where do you go on vacation? Isn't that vacation?
Well, I'm from Cape Cod, right? So it's really going home for me.
Ah,
I get to go see my family and my parents. I have three brothers and a sister that live up in Massachusetts. So for me, it was more going home. But I love the Cape. Especially, Cape is so beautiful. And especially this time of year, summer, October, the Cape is even more spectacular.
Oh, yeah. I was there once.
You know, and then we went from there. I went to New York City because our youngest daughter moved into an apartment down in the West Village. So my wife and I got her set up. In fact, my wife is still up there with her, you know, having like a girl's week. So, and I'm back in Florida doing my thing.
What's it like in New York and Chicago? It's still horrible downtown.
I got to tell you, I was actually very surprised. I expected to go to New York and see, you know, the place burning down. And I said this to a bunch of people. I spent the week really below from 20th Street South. So I was really in the southern tip of Manhattan. Other than less people, which was very visible, It was normal New York City. People walking their dogs and, you know, parents walking the streets and people shopping and wearing their masks, all being very diligent. Certainly plenty of people going out to dinner because you could still eat dinner out in the street. But I'm going to tell you, de Blasio last week said that, he wasn't going to open, you know, in restaurant dining until June of 2021. Well, he might as well close the city down because now September, October, it gets cool at night. You can't really eat outdoors anymore because, A, you get a little bit chilly. The food gets cold the minute you bring it outside. So I'm not sure what he's thinking, but if they're not going to open in-restaurant dining until June of 2021, I think it's going to be a complete disaster in New York.
We need how many recall elections do we need? About 500?
How many what?
Recall elections. We need to recall this. We need to get these people out of office.
Yeah, tell me about it.
This
well, you know, he's up in November of next year, so he's still got a whole another year before anyone is going to challenge him. But I got to tell you, for the most part, and let me just finish this one statement because I think it's important because it's different from what you'll see sometimes in the media. But in the southern tip of Manhattan, I felt like it was normal New York. I did have to go and return a car that I rented in Midtown, like on 45th Street on the west side. I will tell you, the mood there was very, very different. Homeless people all over the place, tent cities on 8th Avenue that I had never seen in the 38 years that I lived in Manhattan and New York, all over 8th Avenue up in Midtown and North, because that's exactly where de Blasio went and rented, you know, hotels to put all the homeless people and all the people that they took out of jail, you know, for minor infractions. They put them all up in hotels on the Upper West Side. So I will tell you, the sense and the tone on the Upper West Side of New York is very different than what it feels like south of 20th Street. I was shocked at the difference.
These people are going to wreck this country. They're 50% of the way. If we don't turn them around, I had dinner Saturday night out at this German place in Frankfurt, only because it's in Will County. Governor Jay decides to... The numbers are up a little bit in Will County. He shuts the restaurant down out of the blue, inside dining for 2 weeks. What do you lay everybody off for 2 weeks? Throw all this crap out that you bought, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're in a restaurant business. Throw everything out that you just bought. Then what? Maybe you'll take his word for it that it opens in 2 weeks and reload the place again, and he'll say, "Nah, another week." You can't have that. Here, it's so obvious, Kennedy, that not one of these people has any idea. I mean, Richard J. Daley I, there was never any doubt that Richard J. Daley knew how a restaurant operated, what the garbage men did for a living. These guys, they're so above it all, they don't know any of this stuff. It doesn't appear to
anybody. I agree. Yeah, agree.
Anyway, take care of yourself, bud. Talk to you next week. SP Futures down 35. NASDAQ Futures down 315. Be back with Mr. Jeff Joseph.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? Have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities, as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blown up by Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. She's AV on the board. S&P futures down 38. NASDAQ futures down 324. A tone changed since last night. The futures up like 10 bucks. And something between the time Asia closed and the rest of us opened, totally different direction. Mike, what's up, buddy?
It's really interesting. Finally we're seeing a little bit of what I would call two-sided action in the market. Hey, it's been an unusual ride since maybe the end of March, where we haven't seen two-sided action. We've only seen action to the upside. So it's nice to see a little back and forth in the market right now.
I would agree. Although when you start seeing some of this stuff and you wonder I've been very complaining loudly for years now the nature of the market with the way, I'm going to say the zero commission has caused nobody to leave a standing order in, incredible payment for order flow, where people, you never trade with another customer. It's really the market fabric is pretty much horse bleep, and this is what I think you see. There's nobody around on the way up and there's nobody around on the way down. But what is your... Obviously, if you listen to the news, I was going to say the sporting news, but no, the news on the markets, everybody's all over this SoftBank thing, and from my little corner of the world, I thought that the people who changed the margin requirements on Tesla and kind of and some companies, big companies, blew the Apple split and gave people margin calls they didn't deserve and gave people their options the first day and then didn't give them the stock till the second day. I thought that bleep up caused a lot of people that were automatically sold out of Tesla and a few in Apple that might have actually started this a little bit, Mike.
Possibly. I mean, one thing that I think you can say relatively with some certainty is the NASDAQ is kind of leading this drive to the way down, but you look at the all the underlyings really in the NASDAQ, big ones, Apple, Tesla, Netflix, Amazon, Google, Facebook, all of those, they all followed the market pretty precisely as far as what we would call like a high correlation. So if we looked at correlations and how things move, everything's moving together right now. And I completely agree. It's an interesting time for all of these types of corporate actions to take place where you're splitting stocks and I'm not surprised at all that the brokerages were messing things up. And, even people at the brokerage get confused when you change rather the trading price. All of a sudden the options, everything gets a little out of whack, at least for that cycle.
Well, it does. I'm sort of in the camp. Well, I mean, firms can do whatever they want. I mean, obviously, it's America, but I'm sort of in the camp that if you get to a price where you think you're too high and you do a two-for-one stock split, it's pretty hard to screw it up. Although, the thing that concerns me, Mike, is that how does a firm, and I won't go too much on the names, but I'll say a firm like a Schwab, like an IB, I don't think they were alone. How does the big guy, I'll say Jeff Joseph sitting on the top of Schwab, because he's bigger than you and I, he's a big shot. How does he sit there and not know that his firm sent out, 400,000 margin calls and him not to say over his second martini, What are you guys doing? There shouldn't be a margin. Shouldn't be a margin calling a split. What's going on? How does how have we managed to distance the people that know something so far away from the systems and from the people that are on the lower end, and they never even get this information?
You know, probably the person sitting at the top of any of those big firms, most of them haven't placed a trade before. And most of the client representatives that you speak to have never placed a trade. And there's a fiduciary conflict, but at the same time, if you have a firm filled with people around the, you know, supporting trading who haven't really ever made a trade or watched the market or know what's going on, then it's not surprising that all of a sudden you miss 400,000 margin calls on the wrong end. I think if you and I were sitting up there, we might say something.
Yeah, well, where's all this mail going? It's a margin call. Well, for what? For a split? Why is there a margin call on a split? There shouldn't be one. I mean, that's pretty basic.
There really shouldn't be. And you see this type of math happen a lot because nothing is run by humans anymore. It's all run by the computers. And if they don't have it programmed in how to effectively... Look, it's like the time that crude oil went below zero. I believe one of the big guys, you know, took a $100 million hit on the fact that their software didn't support a negative future number.
Right.
Understandably so. But at the same time, software has a hard time keeping up with the nuances of trading, it seems.
But, I mean, somebody should say, God, why is this price negative? And somebody would say, we're the ones that are selling. We're what? I mean, the communication, you can have this, you can have this old guy, young guy debate as much as you want. I mean, it never goes anywhere. From the time of Socrates, it never goes anywhere. But the idea that somehow or another you can system yourself out of any kind of decision making, and you don't need anybody that you can call or anybody that I think that has reached the spot where it's just, and it to me, not to get into the COVID, but I've called people and that are firms, friends of mine, and they've been working at home forever, and when you call them, you'll get them or you'll get busy signal or call back or something or an answering machine. Yeah, when you used to call them at the office, it'd be five rings, and, you know, Mike's not here right now. By the way, if you need to, talk to Joe or Lizzie. They're right here. You know, the people who think it's working fine, I think it's working fine for them. But when's the last time they went around, you know, and tried to call the Secretary of State's office, because those guys are probably back to work, but try and call any of these people that are home or the aldermen. They don't. It's working fine for them, but not for you or me. But does anybody actually go around and call their place and see what it's like to call their place?
I've heard of it happening back when TD Ameritrade was heading up things. I've heard of the big guys actually calling in to hear the response. The difficulty is no one's asking. There's a herd mentality in the market right now. No one's asking the questions around trading. Everyone's just trying to get on board. And if you call in, mostly it's because something looks funny in the account. But very few people are considering the market beyond everyone wants to get long. And all of a sudden you have a situation like now where everyone's not going to be able to get out as fast as they'd like if they start running for the doors here today.
Well, and the thing that... When I talk about Mike, and you know, nobody knows what the hell I've out of my things that I know I'm supposed to be writing for people. The Stocks and Jacks 7 to 10 things to save the country, things we should do. And every week I get guys saying, "Where is that?" Well, it's actually starting up. But why can't we raise this $3,000 deduction thing on capital losses? I mean,
what do you mean by that?
Well, when I started in the industry. 81 or 80, whatever the hell it was, I forget. The market was, the Dow was 800. And if you lost money in stock or in a hot dog stand or whatever, the most you could deduct against ordinary income from a capital loss in that year was $3,000. Now you could roll it forward, and if it was 12,000, I could, you know, take 4 years to write it off. Well, now the market is where it is, that number is still 3,000. So if
and you see this all the time. The laws that govern trading are so antiquated to current conditions. A lot of them you can't even figure out what's the point. I often talk about the Regulation T or the pattern day trading. Pattern day trading is kind of one of those things where you wonder who is making the rules in a trading environment to say you can't do round turn, you can't do a round turn trade more than in the same day, and you can't do it more than three times a week. These laws don't make sense anymore.
They don't make sense to you or me. They make perfect sense to the people making them.
Oh, sure. Well, and the disinformation is so great the higher you go up the chain that it's detached from reality, actually.
I'm going to say that I love pushing back on you because we have such an age difference. It's fun. When I started the business, the idea was that there were individual traders making markets, doing stuff. There were thousands of them, if you take all the exchanges. And I won't say everybody's making money, but there was, between the brokers and everybody, I mean, by and large, there was money to be made there. And so as time went by, the relentlessness, Merrill Lynch started in 1978 with gathering assets, charging people 1%, and doing nothing. And they don't want anybody going against that. And they've been relentless for almost 50 years.
The model hasn't changed. The model really hasn't changed in the sense that they'll take your money and they'll put it into the high flyers, right?
No, they'll put it in anywhere.
You're getting a market return plus or minus some beta around it, so it's actually a little more risky. But they're all doing the same thing with your money, and it's not really, there's no thought to the whole process, I guess you could say.
They want four or five firms with everybody's dough charging 1.5% a year, and nobody gets to try and do better. There's no options. They don't want any of that stuff. You watch. If the Democrats win, and I absolutely cannot stand the man in office, but I'll tell you this. If the Democrats win, the thing that Trump successfully pushed down was something out of the Department of Labor that is going to prohibit people doing any sort of active trading in anybody's IRA account. It's all just going to be mutual funds and places like Merrill Lynch where they can give them money for percent and a half. They're going to essentially put everybody like you and me out of business in the extent we'd call it fiduciary. And yet those people, they charge a percent and a half, and they don't do anything. they just rake you up 1.5%. You and I could do that in a second.
The lobbyists, the people who are lobbying for this on top, don't even know that they are, in fact, hurting the average investor. And if they do know it, they're making so much money by regulating this and not allowing. You see, the self-directed idea is also what they're afraid of. They're afraid of people making intelligent decisions.
They're going to say people putting. But they're going to say they're saving people from themselves.
Sure. And that's always been the argument. We're saving people from themselves, but not having insight into how the actual flow of the market works and just say, well, we're saving you from yourself from making a risky bet is really, really uninformed for how trading actually works in the real market, the reality of trading.
I'll tell you, Mike, disgusting it's become. I do some expert witness testimony, I think you probably know, but once in a while, I don't do a lot of it. But now, if you were to take somebody's money over the last 5 years, and with the market doing the way it is, say you have an options portfolio or you do something, even if you are if the person is 80% at Merrill Lynch, they put it in Big Cap Bob and Mid Cap Mike and God knows what else, they just put it in there, the big cookie cutter thing where just this percentage of this and that. Now the markets happened to go up until recently, right? Or certainly up until the fall of 2018. So if you were to take somebody's money and do something different, maybe it's a delta neutral fund or something. We do option spreads where people are delta neutral or something. Where people say, yeah. I don't know, but if you were to do that, and all of a sudden somebody would arbitrate against you, the expert witness now says the prudent man would have just given it to Merrill Lynch in the market, and the prudent fiduciary guy made 6% a year, 8% a year, because the market just nothing to go up. Even if you broke even, they're going to say you owe the guy the difference.
Yeah, and it would be a lot different, though, if the market didn't just go up. And markets don't have to go up. You almost feel like dumb for saying it, but I think a lot of people don't realize that markets can go sideways in a year. They can actually even go down in a year. I know it doesn't sound like anything that's possible right now, but in fact, you look like a genius if you did the most obvious thing, which is buy, get long, shut your eyes, do nothing. But over time, that strategy isn't necessarily the best strategy to follow year after year. So if you were doing intelligent investing, you might have actually not seen the same type of returns. But the idea is over the long term, the intelligent investor does better.
I would agree.
The buy and hold.
But you're, I'm going to say, unfortunately, giving these people some sense that they're actually decent people. Now, if I own a hot dog stand or a hamburger stand with 20 locations, well, there'd be 20 stands, and all of a sudden this upstart guy like Mike comes in, and he's charging 10% less for hamburgers that are like a way a lot better than mine, well, I could do two things, three things. I could lower my price. I could figure out how to cook my hamburgers better so I can compete with you. Or I can find a way that to get my buddy in the city council to like double your taxes so you're out of business. Right?
1, 2, 3. Yeah, I think all of those are... that's a good comparison,
yeah.
Really. You have basically everyone defaulting to, well, let's change regulations to meet our financial goals. And the idea of fiduciary responsibility actually goes out the window completely. And you're just figuring out ways inside the law to manipulate it to work out best for you. I know I'm speaking broadly here, but to me, that's how the system works. I'm not saying that's exactly how, but I'm just trying to condense it into a quick format.
Well, do you think that there's in the year 2030, if you were to dig into the brains of Fidelity and Schwab and a few others, do you think that the Tasty Trade or PTI Securities are going, in their mind, should be here in 2030? I'm saying the answer is no.
Well, I actually think will be more important in 2030 than the progression right now seems to be heading in the way of dumb investing. But the day we have a down market, or the year we have a down market, and everybody loses. All of a sudden, they're going to start asking questions.
Don't confuse me rooting for you and me and agreeing with you to what the other guy's thinking. The world would be a lot better if you and I didn't exist.
In their mind, absolutely. Yeah. They want everyone following the same model, which is give us your money. We're going to charge you for that money.
Yeah.
We're going to do nothing with your money other than do exactly what you could do, which is buy the market.
Yep.
So we're going to be long the market. We're going to give you exactly market returns because we're long the actual market. And that's the only play they have. Some of these bigger houses, they won't even sell short. You have long-only funds. They
right.
will not even sell short, probably because they don't understand how.
Well, but I mean, don't ever feel like I'm an old fart professor here. Look what they did to my business on the trading floor. So don't ever assume or think for a second that just because you and I are upstart and we know it's better for people, or at least we'll give people a choice. I'm not saying no, it's better, but we'll give people a choice. I mean, why have we got to the point now where there's three or four order flow providers, as they like to call themselves, making $1 million a day instead of literally 4,000 or 5,000 people making a living?
Yeah, well, I think ultimately what it comes down to is you and I understand the idea behind order flow and the necessity of it for a fair market, but the people on top have no idea. They've never even witnessed order flow, legitimate order flow. So the idea of making the argument to the on the higher end, the idea of even you start with order flow, you've already confused them.
Well, I mean, they're, in their mind, commissions are free. Everybody's happy. What's the problem? And four big firms are making all the money and are greasing my pocket. What's wrong with this? What's wrong with this picture? None. Nothing. For them.
Well, I mean, assuming the market keeps going higher, I guess everything's fine.
Well, do you think for a second, if we, when we opened this morning, we had the Blues down 46, I'll bet in every single one of these stocks, I've managed to maneuver my people into stuff that I think is going to remain liquid, relatively liquid, even on days like this. But you're going to drop into the QQQs this morning, and if you try and roll something out from, where are we, September, you try and do a November, December roll, there's nobody there. There's nowhere near the market there is whenever.
It's for the very reason that we're down, and the market right now doesn't know how to respond well to down. And like you said, the liquidity begins to dry up, and that's kind of what we talk about all the time, is when people are running for the door, they expect to see the same liquidity as going higher. But really, if you look at it, there's a natural skew in the market. There's more risk always being placed, for the most part, always being placed to the downside. People aren't afraid as things move higher. I guess the idea is everyone's making money. But the look at the opposite, if things start going down, that's when people get scared. Everyone starts running for the door, and there is no exit, because the only thing they can do is sell their position. There's no working around it. There's no financial engineering around it. So you're long. The only way out is to get short. They don't even understand the options market, obviously.
Right. Well, more people did years ago when people used to take courses, and there was all kinds of ways to learn to do options. And now they've been totally, I mean, we have some people at some of the places that I do, like I said, subcontract stuff, and a couple of the guys, essentially, one thing you'd like, if I don't know if you're in the managed money business, but if people, the sort of the last thing you want, I'll say this, even if a potential client's listening, if somebody gives you a check, and you can start with the check and say, okay, where do you want to be? How aggressive do you want to be? And do a very personal thing, and you can do a really good job for somebody. I think I do, and I think you would. But if all of a sudden somebody lobs in a portfolio, especially if they did some options on their own, or if it's a Merrill Lynch portfolio where there's like 20 pages of the thing, Jesus mm-hmm. Christ, Mike, you want no part of that. Trying to work your way at it. I mean, 200 shares of this, 150 of this, and by the way, there's a couple options here and a few there. And all of a sudden...
Right. Another fact is, there isn't a cookie cutter for everyone. There isn't, everyone has their own risk level, risk tolerance levels. How much exposure do you want in your portfolio? We can make it risky. We can make it as safe as we want to make it. So there is a lot more control that people like you and I recognize. But I think for the most part, it's just going on deaf ears now, and the more and more we head down this road, the more detached these bigger companies get from reality.
But individual people, I've had, especially guys that will listen to like CNBC or someplace all day, and they become these, just get paid to buy the stock, just sell the put kind of thing. I've seen portfolios where guys are short two or three puts in Apple, two or three in Tesla, two or three here, two or three. I said, do you have any idea if the market's down 8%? Not only how bad this is going to look, but how many trades you're going to have to make as an individual just to right this ship. And they look at me like I got two heads. I mean, Mike, when I was on a trading floor trading the OEX, I had two really good clerks. I mean, real good clerks that knew how to adjust stuff. And we have positions in 40 to 50 different stocks. Positions, but watch out. We never had more than four or five that were going to expire that week that we had to be hands-on, where below the strike you're bid for 20,000 shares and above you're selling 20. I mean, if you had 30 of those, I don't know how many people I would need. I mean, and yet individual people, these firms let them walk themselves into these positions that were, God, if this thing goes down 10%, we got to make 40 trades. Who the hell is going to do that? I mean,
right.
I mean, there's a question not only of risk, but is is how many orders can you put in? How many rolls can you do, especially when everything's a two-lot roll and on the markets are $2 wide? I mean, what are you doing with this stuff? Every one of those things could take you an hour. Let's hope we don't see too much of that today, although while we're talking, one of us is doggy down here. The spoons are down 46 now. I didn't expect this, did you, today? I mean, especially last night when we were up. Anyway, after the break, let's talk more about the VIX here. I know you're a VIX guy. I got it up 4.25, trading 35.
Yeah, we got lots to talk about.
Yeah, we got plenty to talk about. We'll be right back. Like I said, S&P futures down 45. NASDAQ futures down 366. Ouch. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Lauren, what makes Stacks Jacks? I'm Tom Howe. She's AV on the board. S&P futures down 45. And if he's down 368, this is after being up last night. I pity the fool that paid up 10 for the spoos last night. He's down a quick 55. It's a long way. Dow futures down 178 over in Europe. Whack, whack, whack over here, too. DAX down 194. That's 1.5%. FTSE down 39. That's only 0.6. CAC down 99. That's a full 2%. We're here. We're down 3 in the NASDAQ. We're only down 1.3 in the spoos. Asia, now these guys closed up before whatever happened. Nikkei up 184.8%, Shanghai up 23.7%, Hang Seng up 34%, call that flat. Just as a review, since it was a while ago, Dow Jones was down 159 on Friday, S&P's down 28%, NASDAQ down 144%. So NASDAQ may have been going down here for like a while. 10-year, 0.67%, a Bund minus 0.50%, Japan almost as high minus, or positive 0.046%, almost back up to 0.5%. Oil down 5%, down $2, $37.71. Brent down 3.2%. That's $1.37 at $40.64. Natural gas down 3 cents at $2.55. RBOB down 5 cents at $1.12. It was $1.30 like 2 weeks ago. So RBOB gas is down like 20 cents now in 2-3 weeks. That's a lot. Gold down $8 at $19.25. Silver actually up a penny, $26.32. Copper still over $3, but down 2 cents. At 303. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Hi there. It's a gloomy and rainy morning this Tuesday. Widespread thunderstorms will continue the whole day today and into Wednesday. 62 degrees currently right now, and thunderstorms will slowly diminish during the afternoon, but expect steady rain overnight. The highest of the day should be 66 and the lowest 61 at night. Finally, relief for Phoenix. The excessive heat warning is canceled, but still sunny and very hot in Phoenix. The highest 101 degrees with light winds. 70 is the lowest at night. Expect clear skies during the night as well. And we have traffic value is slowly increasing. Chicago has experienced delays across the expressways due to the wet weather. Be ready for slow traffic on Adams East from West Division down to 31st. And in sports, we have Cubs at 1 Cardinals, 5-1, and Diamondbacks lost to Giants, 2-4. Chief, back to you.
So you're going to regale us about Lou Brock and basketball and hockey and everything, too?
What?
I think not. Mike, we're back. Were you lucky enough to see Lou Brock play or no?
No, I haven't. You know, honestly,
see,
like,
I'm not the only
I haven't
one.
Really kept up with what's going on right now.
Well, I've not watched a basketball game, nor will I. Once the Hawks were out, I haven't watched a hockey game. I might have watched a little bit of a hockey game, and I'm watching some of the Cubs, and it's without anybody in the stands. Those guys, the games take so long, I just can't. If you and I went and had some adult beverages,
it almost feels like you're watching a practice game sometimes.
I know.
You know, I've tried to watch a few baseball games, tried to watch a couple basketball games, but it really isn't the same. Even viewing experience or gameplay that you typically would see with the fans in the stadium. It makes a big difference. Home team, not home team, I don't think that matters right now.
No, it doesn't really. There's actually probably only two sports where there's some home field advantage. One is surely hockey because you get the second line call, right? It actually is an advantage. Where you get to put the line out after you see the other guy's line, right? So that, and in baseball, to the extent that the parks are different, not as different as they used to be, but to the extent the parts are different and you kind of design your team for your park. I mean, if you got a real big outfield, you got fast guys and those kinds of things, there's a slight advantage over the year, but I don't know that in any given game there necessarily is. Basketball.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, absolutely. I know Wrigley Field is unique to all the baseball stadiums. Generally, are unique to that hometown, right?
But like hockey used to be, they had the rink that was the supposed size. It's 200 by 80 or 100. I don't know, but something like that. Back when we were 16, there were only like a couple of rinks that were standard size. The rest of them, I think the Hawks were 12 feet shorter.
and Boston was, somebody was narrower. So when they had the team where they had all the guys that were the thugs, you basically couldn't get away from them. the thing was there.
Not enough ring to run away.
Well, plus Montreal had they had no. We might as well talk about this a little bit since the market's so awful. They're down 53 now. There was not a standard radius for the corner. So even though I think Toronto and
interesting. So yeah. if you're kind of doing the math in your head and you're doing the you're passing the puck or whatever, it's going to be different per arena.
Well, I mean, Montreal had a very tight radius. It was almost, I won't say 90 degrees, but it was very close. Toronto had a very broad curve on the side. So for Toronto, their whole thing was forecheck, dump in. This is the old place. Dump in, whack it in the corner, and the puck would essentially come right back out. So you'd chase it, and you'd look for one of those bounces, and you'd try and get it before the defense didn't slam it home. Where in Montreal, the difference, they always had the fastest skaters and they had a bunch of little guys. Because the reason, they actually, it was some incredible more square footage of ice because of the difference in the radius than Toronto. I mean, it was in the hundreds and hundreds of square feet ice more. So they had like, wow. It was the world's biggest rink. But now I think that's all kind of standard. And I don't know if the players, now one place must look just like the other type of thing. But baseball.
That's really interesting. I actually had never heard that before. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, because the old places were designed, just for that. And the Hawks had a guy like Bobby Hull who basically could shoot anywhere blue line in that was a threat to go in. He was so strong that last thing he wanted was a short rink when that guy was on the ice. Because he was a man among men when he first came up. Now,
sure.
Plus they let those guys use those curved sticks. I mean, that was brutal what those things could do. I mean, talk about they could send the thing so fast it was scary. All right, we're down 51. Are we talking margin calls here? I mean, obviously the margin calls are probably piling up.
At Tesla right now, and things are getting whacked this morning.
Yeah.
Tesla's down, it's trading at 356 pre-market hours. It closed at 418. So, we're down a good 60 points in Tesla. Tesla was trading up at one point over 500, barely over 500. But I'm looking at the volatility, and this is what I find really interesting about the volatility right now, is Tesla, over the course of the past year, has had pretty substantial swings up and down, which implies there's been a lot of volatility. Now, if you look at the current level of volatility right now, it's in the 94th percentile [S2]
Yep. [S1]
Of where it's been over the past year. So given all the market moves we've seen, this is one of the top moves for the year, with Tesla trading. Tesla's pure volatility really high at 144%, which is exceptionally high, I guess you could say.
Well, after split, I've got it topping out. This is on 9-1, which would have been, last Monday, right?
Yeah.
I have topping out, third, last Tuesday, because the fourth was Friday, correct? All right, so last Tuesday, it topped out at 502, and now I've got it at 358, something like that.
And you talk about how quickly things can change or how, I don't think anyone's worried yet. I think everyone's like, well, that's an acceptable amount, but you got to remember, what is that? 20%? More than 20%?
Well, on the one hand is you say it's like a real lot. On the other hand, it only gets you back to the 19th of August.
Right. And you look at when you put everything in the perspective of just say a year chart, right now, it still looks like a blip on the radar compared to where it was and where it's heading. I mean, I can go back to March, and we were trading $75 at one point in March, and now, so the run-up we've seen, I don't think everyone's sort of not scared yet, but you can tell people are starting to get scared in Tesla because the volatility is so high. But
$72 on March 18th.
72, yeah. So just an unbelievable run. and if, as high as 500, so I guess 357 doesn't seem too bad. You look at the VIX. VIX is definitely moving on this, and it's moving ever since we saw a little bit of that sell-off. VIX is at 38 right now, and actually I have it at 35. So the VIX at 35, what does that mean? Well, you can interpret it in many ways, but one way you can interpret it, which is kind of maybe the big picture, if you want to know the big picture of what 38 means, it literally translates into mathematically as 1 year expect a plus or minus 38% range in the S&P 500. That's actually what it means.
Yeah, which, you know, the I'm going to hopefully not blow everybody away here with the math because it'd be pre-split, post-split, but the thing was trading, what, like 2350 or something pre-split?
Yeah, right around there.
Split 5 20, for 1.
There's been sort of an artificial floor set in this year. Call it virus risk, call it presidential risk, whatever. But last year, VIX was averaging around 12 print, and now you're right, it's 2023, somewhere in there.
Well, the Tesla, because I looked at this last week, what possessed me to, Mike, is one of the people that brought in some of these options and stock from one of these places that I was kind of helping somebody with, they had all these calls that were like really far in the money in Tesla, right? Like really far. So I'm putting on all these low strikes. And I just happened to notice stocks trading 2,300, I'll say 23 and change, 2,320 or something, I don't know exactly where, but it's way the hell up there, right? Guess what the January 300 put, this coming January, was trading. Now we're talking 1/7 of the price of the stock.
Right, and I would guess it was pretty, there was a market being made down there.
Would you
unbelievable,
believe?
But there was a market being made. I couldn't even guess. I really couldn't guess, because when you see volatility at that level, it makes you wonder where the market participation is actually coming in. But when volatility gets to that level, you can better believe people are buying puts down there, as crazy as it sounds, which is making a market and causing volatility to expand even more.
Would you believe $3.50?
I would believe it. And the reason why is one time, I'm going to say, Tesla was trading near $500. The $20 puts I managed to sell for over $1.
That's unreal.
So, yeah, I know. And but you know, that's where the market's placing risk. So when volatility gets this high, you can look at it also as an opportunity to step in. I mean, I'd be pretty comfortable selling the 300 puts, and you got to realize that's got a 99.9%. chance of not happening that it goes there. Probably maybe even add another 9 to that. But I guess the market's still pricing it in, and it's pricing it in $3.50. That's that's a good amount of premium for something that is so unlikely.
Well, but if you sell it, of course, you mean the margin would be the minimum because you're so far out of the money. But still. What was even better, Mike, is you could have bought the 400 puts for, say, $5. So if you bought one of those and sold two of the, which these are spreads I used to like to do, I mean, don't even think about doing this in your retail account. If I would buy one of the 400, sell two of the 300s, I could have done that for $2 credit, and now my break even's 200.
It's amazing. And just to point out what you're doing there, called a ratio spread, and effectively you're paying for the long put. So you're buying that put and you're selling two calls against it to effectively finance the put. So you might even be doing it for a credit where you're taking in money to do the actual trade.
Of course,
being too much movement to the downside where you have that naked put.
I mean, of course, you could never withstand the pain, but if it actually went down there and closed at like 3.25, you'd make $75. There's something amazing about a dough. Of course, if it got down to that low, the thing would be going out of business, so you'd be scrambling to get your short ones in, right?
Absolutely. You know, if it went down that low,
first of all, the buying power effect. So right now, if you go out a year, you can sell the $21. Hold on a second. I'm looking at the VIX. So if I go into Tesla and we go out, say, a year, we'll go to December. And all the strikes are funny. I don't even have a market being made for them out in December. And this is all just due to the new markets. So an example of when things split, markets don't make sense. And it doesn't look like I have a solid market for Tesla right now.
Well, I'll see if I can get something here. Because,
of course, yeah.
But, I mean, when people are not convinced, some people will say the thing might, you know, the darn thing could go out of business. I mean, I don't necessarily believe that. But I've got the December 100 puts, which are, where are we? October, November, December. So that's 14 weeks away. The 100s, and the thing's trading 358. I got them for like a buck and a half. That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot of premium being priced in. And again, that's what you might see. One thing you can do, which we've talked about before, is you're able to define the risk when you do options. So if you just sell a put, that's naked risk. So you carry all the risk to the downside. But you can define the risk by selling a put and then buying a put below it. And you've effectively created a spread width that is the most you can lose is the distance of that width.
Or you could just say, I think Tesla's worth, it's trading 358. I think it's worth, you know, whatever, 250. And yeah, would I love to buy it at 100? I would. So yeah, I'll sell some of those just for laughs. I mean, and if I end up having to buy it there, I'll be happy as a clam. Now the problem with that is, this is a classic Saturday morning, Mike. And this was, was always, you know, one of the highest held, most widely held, you know, stocks there were, right? And everybody wanted to be in GE. This is, you know, 10 years ago. Now nobody wants
to. Not anymore.
No, well, that day. They made so much money in GE Capital, they essentially forgot how to run the rest of the place, right? I mean, is that a fair assessment? And then all of a sudden, the stuff in GE Capital is falling apart. Interest rates are down here. Their assets made it to as high as they could go, and he sold them all off. So GE Capital, talk about an amazing run. Someday, Mike, we'll get on, we'll talk about the marriage between the Resolution Trust and GE, you know, and how all that stuff came out of the Resolution Trust. It was one of the biggest heists in the history of the world, maybe the biggest. Anyway, I've got a seminar that Saturday morning, right? And I always wanted to buy GE under $30. I could never get it there. I would put my people in it. I'd put myself in it. And the thing always was, you know, get down to 32 and kind of tease me, and then right back up to 35, paid a nice dividend, and they made money. You know, and it was just, then it'd run to 38, but it was always solid. And, all of a sudden, we have a seminar on a Saturday morning, and the stock's down to, I don't know, when things started falling apart in 2007, right? And I go, yes, geez, like, I always want to buy it under 30. What are you guys thinking? Like, you know, guys and women. They all raised their hands. I said, well, I don't know if you saw it yesterday, but it's trading like 27. How about if a lot of them were PTI clients. I said, how about if I pass around a stock ticket? You can actually fill out your own ticket, put how many shares you want, put your name on the bottom, we'll buy it for you Monday morning. And everybody's like, wait a minute, the world don't look so hot. You know, so you sort of have to be careful when I say something both intelligent and stupid and say, okay, in December I'd love to buy Tesla at 100. Well, that's today talking, right? But then imagine the world in December when Tesla's under 100. I mean, what does the world look like? I mean, are we going under? Does it look like 1932 because the government's... I mean, for that to happen, I'd sure like another look at that one, wouldn't you?
Well, and, you know, that's... I thought about Bitcoin and Bitcoin trading at 20,000 compared to Bitcoin trading at 2,500. It happened real fast, and the market didn't expect that big of a sell-off. But the reality is, it can happen. So, yeah, Tesla below 100, well, what's going on in the world? Things change, and we see the market respond, and it's not impossible. That's for sure. It's definitely in the realm of possibility, because you look at the volatility where it's pricing it in, it's even giving value to the 300s. So 300 puts have value because there is that possibility, and market participants are afraid of it.
valued at $30 in December. That's real value.
Mm-hmm.
That's 10% of the price of the stock, for God's sake. And they're $60 out of the money.
And like I said, Ivy Rank is the metric that we use to say what percentile is the implied volatility falling right now. And it's really up there towards the highest level we've seen this year. And, of course, this probably being the highest level ever seen, because this year, without a doubt, has got to be the most volatile year for Tesla, at least in price ranges.
Right. Well, yeah, but it's funny, Mike, when you know, when I started, when I did, it was educational to the extent that it was the absolute polar opposite of what it is now, in the sense that interest rates were 12 to 14. You could even have gotten 15 if you really looked at some savings and loan. Or Continental Bank, for God's sake, the dear departed Continental Bank. And it was, but the companies that were left when we were trading 800 in the Dow, I mean, General Motors, IBM, they were making money, even at the economy in that horse bleep shape. They were selling cars, they had positive income, and they were still sending you a check. To the point where you got to the feeling where, wow, if these guys somehow are making things work now, the only way for these interest rates to go is the other way. So you really felt comfortable being long, except for the fact it never went up. It took like 2 years when I first started. I think I started in December of 80. We didn't move up till August of 82, and yet all along the way it was just like pretty obvious that people were so entrenched into interest rates are high. Why would anybody ever own a stock? Only an idiot owns a stock. If you'd have walked into a high end cocktail party in spring of 1981 and said, you know what, these interest rates, and mind you, you could get 15% of the savings loan down the block. I mean, for you to say,
right.
You know, I could see you with your glass of wine and your pinky up, saying, you know what, I think I'm leaving the party and I'm going to go find my mutual fund guy. He's probably painting houses somewhere. And I'm going to take my money out of the bank and put it in the market. You'd have been laughed down the block. You know, it's sort of like now, if somebody were to say, I'm going to sell my Apple and then put it in the bank and just wait and see what happens. I mean, you'd be tossed out. But
yeah, it's a complete polar opposite. And you know, the market's always, investors are always chasing returns, but they're chasing them in hindsight. So right now, interest rates, yeah, you would be laughed out if you said, I'm going to sell all my Apple and put it in interest rates. But how quickly things can change.
Well, yeah.
You start seeing a rise in rates. You start seeing Apple fall off. All of these things are possible. And Apple, remember, every large stock, I would say the top biggest stock in 2000 are probably not on that list, or maybe one or two are. But
There's only one. Can you name it?
Only one.
There's only one
stat.
Oh,
that's cool. I didn't even know you. So you actually know the stat. Only one.
Yeah, but there were
that's an amazing fact. That's an amazing fact right there.
The five or six stacks in 2000 that were 48% were Oracle, Dell, Cisco, Microsoft's the only one, Intel, and there was one other.
ExxonMobil?
No. It was all high tech. They were the top five stacks in the queues. Oracle, Cisco, Microsoft, Dell, and Intel. It was those five.
Yeah.
I don't even know
what half those are doing right now, because they're not on my radar.
Microsoft's the only one that's over the price it was back then, in 2000.
There you go. Yeah, and, you know, I think in 2000, all money was chasing after those big tech names, and ultimately there was a day of reckoning, and you didn't see those returns anymore. It got passed off to the next crowd, Apple, Amazon, Google, those types.
But it took a long time. But Cisco, because I went to a seminar, Dr. J double books, so I was doing a seminar, you'd love this, Mike, in Brooklyn, back before Brooklyn was Brooklyn. It was kind of crummy. I had a 6 o'clock seminar, and everybody in the room, because we had promised to talk about repair strategies, everybody in the room had Cisco, and was trading 6 from 62. Let me just say, there's no repair strategy that I can think of that's going to help you out there. But Cisco had gotten to 11 times sales. And it was funny. I was looking at this, what's the thing everybody uses at home? Zoom.
last week when this thing ran up, it's $100 or whatever. It's 11 times sales. It's like the same number. Mm-hmm. How scary is that?
And seeing history sort of repeat itself again. I think it's an eye opener, and you got to take into account that the market is pricing in quite a bit of volatility at this level. So the first sell off we see, volatility almost goes off the chart. So it just goes to show how shaky. We're actually on shaky ground right now, at least according to the volatility in the market.
Mike, we got like 15 seconds. I'm worried about the CPI number Friday. It comes in hot. It's 3 in a row. Are you worried about it, or is that just an old guy talking?
I'm not worried about it because it feels right now that none of these numbers seem to be affecting this run that we've had. It seems like the market's more irrational than any of the economic numbers coming out.
I think you're probably right, but we'll have you on soon. I think we might be going to try and make you a regular. We'll talk to you about that. S&P futures down 43, NASDAQ futures down 327, actually back from the lows. We'll see what happens. We'll talk about tomorrow's Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.